This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?"
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello everyone, I'm Chris Wynn and welcome to the Rocker Report podcast in association with Sunderland Community Soup Kitchen, where we build up to our second League One fixture of the season. This time it's our first game on our travels after the weekend's 2-1 win over Wigan Athletic at the Stadium of Light as we take on MK Dons at Stadium MK. After they had a bit of a crazy opening day last week at Bolton, which I'm sure we'll hear all about. So to bring us up to speed with all the comings and goings at Milton Keynes, we're very pleased to have the company of Liam Connolly from the MK1 podcast. Hello, Liam.
Hi, Chris. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm not bad, thanks. Well, I'm tip-top after getting 3 points against Wigan at the weekend. How are you keeping?
Yeah, not too bad. I don't blame you for being in the way you do regarding the Wigan result. It was a great, brilliant result for yourself. And yeah, not too bad for myself. Yeah, it's been an entertaining couple of weeks, to say the least.
Yeah, it was particularly pleasing at the weekend, obviously, to get one over Max Power and Charlie Wyke and Jordan Jones and the other 50 ex-Sunderland players or whatever at Wigan Athletic. But yeah, it was an enjoyable one. And I want to come back to your opening day because it was a bit, like I said, it was a bit crazy, but it deserves a longer conversation in a bit. But I'm just assuming you're glad this season's back up and running.
Yeah, so we were lucky to have the experience of going to Bournemouth a week before everyone else. In terms of experiencing the Carabao Cup game, admittedly it turned a bit toxic towards the end and the result wasn't the result we wanted. But regardless, it was still good to get out on the away days again and see everyone you hadn't seen in absolutely donkeys. And get back to football, basically.
Yeah, we had that pleasure at the weekend of kind of feeling normality, which was a good thing. But I mean, just quickly, a bit about you, Liam, and MK Dons. You know, obviously looking into it, MK Dons, you know, you know, fairly kind of recent history, but it's the 18th season of having MK Dons under that name. So in terms of following the club, do you go all the way back to the beginning?
Pretty much, yeah. I remember going to the hockey stadium and things like that when Wimbledon FC first came over to Milton Keynes, and I went to a few games during that period, but I officially started adopting the club when it changed its name to Milton Keynes Dons. I went for a few seasons at the hockey stadium and then obviously back to Stadium MK, and I've been a season ticket holder for years and years. So yeah, it's been to support my local club ever since then, and going home and away.
Yeah. Well, actually, just quickly on that, I mean, 18 years as MK Dons being Milton Keynes team. I mean, now I suppose you're getting that first generation who were kind of born whilst the club existed. So they've known nothing else but Milton Keynes.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I think I was 6 or 7 when the move happened. So, of course, I was oblivious to the whole politics regarding it all and everything like that. So I find it funny when, you know, certain sections of supporters, you get it every single weekend. I'm sure we'll get it this weekend as well. Like, I've already support MK Dons, rah, rah, rah. But it's football local team pretty much. And the next generation of Dons fans coming up now are going to have that same experience of supporting the local team, and hopefully it builds and builds on that.
Yeah, it's an interesting one as it goes on. But I'm sure there'll be kind of fans now almost having to be taught, you know, this is why we're getting this stick. Because they'll know nothing, like you said, they'll know nothing about it.
Well, that's the thing. I think because well, by the time the next generation of Dauntlands come up, we'll be the older ones, sort of educating them on everything that's happened and why, you know, certain things happen. And I'm sure when we go to AS Wimbledon this season, it's going to be an interesting experience because, you know, in the majority of Don's fans' eyes, you know, MK Don's fans' eyes at least, you know, Plough Lane is where Milton Keynes or Wimbledon FC was, and that's where we believe Wimbledon FC. So it's like going back to the spiritual home of your club, even though you're so many miles away. So yeah, that fixture still is, of course, controversy, and, you know, it just is what it is.
Yeah. Well, I mean, before we get on to recent events, I want to look at last season. And you finished 13th last season, obviously under Russell Martin, who I'm sure is a character we'll come back to at some point in all this. But I mean, how was the feeling around the club finishing mid-table last season? Because you kind of struggled the season before that. I think you'd finished 19th the season before that.
Yeah, that first season we finished 19th was difficult because Russell Martin came in, taking over Paul Tisdale, who, quite frankly, wasn't a very good manager. I think most Don's fans are in agreement with that. And yeah, Russell Martin came in towards the end of the season and we did play really well. We got some big results against teams highest above us in the league. So the second season is full of optimism. Russell Martin's first full season. And bar a slow start, we did really, really well. You know, we spoke a lot on the podcast about being a playoff team for the last 30 games of the season because we were statistically. And we were in the top six pretty much the whole time. It's just unfortunate that we had such a slow start. And the majority was to do with, you know, Russell Martin's play style, you know, playing out from the back, playing very high-risk, high-reward football. That did cost us some games, and he got a lot of slack towards the start, which I'm sure will happen at his new club now, where he's at the Championship. But, you know, we grew into the season and we finished well. And the hope was going into this season that that would be the same and would even challenge, you know, for the top six or even higher than that. Mm-hmm. And we've certainly got the players to do that. But, of course, with the uncertainty regarding who's actually going to manage this team at the moment, it's a difficult situation to sort of get a grasp on.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting you mentioned that because I was looking at it thinking, you know, because, I mean, just if you look purely in terms of league position, six places higher. But what I was going to ask was, you know, because Russell Martin came out of it looking, you know, having this reputation of after MK Dons finished 13th. But as you said, was it a real huge improvement? Was a complete shift, was it, last season? Because, like, six positions doesn't seem like much just on paper.
Yeah, well, the funny thing is that whole area of the League One table was so close even towards the end. So we were a couple of wins off of, you know, there was playoff talk like four or five games left of the season, and, you know, we just fell off towards the end basically. But there was a genuine chance we could have playoffs last season. So I think that's where all that chatter came from. And, you know, I think the biggest achievement that Russell Martin did have was he brought the club back together. It's very disjointed after the League Two season, and Paul Tisdale, quite frankly, was just almost ruined the fan base in terms of certain opinions regarding his play style. But what Russell did was, you know, he engaged with, you know, ourselves and other podcasts and did things with the fans that brought us together, understood his philosophies. And whether you believe those philosophies anymore as a Dons fan, it's hard to because of what's happened. But I think the actual purpose of what happened, you know, it worked. And I think that's why this season we were so optimistic of what was going to happen because we signed these really good players and arguably it was our biggest transfer window ever in terms of the players assigned. So the first of the players are still there, but when the main man kind of leaves it and leaves it for dead, it's a difficult one to take.
Yeah, well, I mean, again, just quickly looking at last season, because obviously from a Sunderland point of view, you had Will Grigg on loan last season. And he was, I mean, going back, way back to 2015, he was your top scorer when you got promoted to the Championship as well. But, I mean, last season he got 8 and 20 appearances. So how did he get on last season at MK Dons?
Yeah, Will Grigg gets a lot of love at Milton Keynes, that's for sure. Of course, as you mentioned, from the promotion seeds, you know, he was terrific in that. And, you know, there was definitely a feel of him having his homecoming, I suppose, come back to Milton Keynes on loan. And in the games he started, admittedly, the goal record doesn't look amazing for a striker. He expected to be scoring loads of goals, considering the wages he's on and the fees he went for. Mm-hmm. But I think when he started games, he actually played really, really well. I think in the first sort of three or four games, he had about four or five goal contributions, which in our system, our strikers aren't necessarily looking to score goals all the time. It's more about working hard for the team. And, you know, that's why I mentioned goal contributions over goals, because assists matter as much as that for the strikers. there was a link up play and everyone scoring goals rather than having, you know, like a Charlie Wyke up front who's going to score 30 goals for you. So I think on the whole, he did really well. But I think what ultimately, he wasn't worth paying X amount of money for Russell Martin. And I think if you actually thought about it as a Milwaukee Don fan, it made sense because he's not going to be that striker that's going to project you up to the championship, unfortunately. And I think that's why Sunderland, you know, you got your Ross Stewarts and things like that who, you know, are going to start regularly now for Sunderland, and I think really benefit from that.
Yeah. I mean, were you disappointed that he didn't sign permanently in the summer? Was that ever on the cards?
I think it was at one point. I think, you know, the Martin was open to signing him, but I think it had to be for the right deal. And ultimately, Sunderland want to get some sort of investment back, don't they, from Gregor? They spent, you know, millions of pounds on. So I think if you look at it now and say, look, we've got Mo Iser, Troy Parrott, Charlie Brown, et cetera, et cetera, I don't think you can really say you want Wilbrick as well. And I think some fans, if they do say that, are being a bit, you know, trying to case to the 2014-2015 Grig, who was so good.
Yeah, I'm not sure it's a transfer fee we're looking for at the minute. It's just trying to get wages off the book. That's the nightmare we've got. But yeah, I mean, let's go on to this summer. You mentioned a few players there, but we'll go through the business you've done. Because again, it was Russell Martin who brought those players in. I was looking through them. Mo Iser is the big one, I suppose. Looked like an undisclosed fee whenever I've tried to look it up. But keep saying that you broke your transfer record. And there were quite a few looking at Mo Iser in the summer. So was he one that the fans were kind of particularly pleased to get over the line?
Yeah, I know one of my co-hosts on the podcast, Ross, is a big fan of Mo Iser. And it's been rumoured, funny enough, a lot of the players that we signed this summer, we've been trying to get since last summer. Also, like last January, sorry. Like Ethan Robson, Mo Iser, and a few others. But yeah, it's a believed club record fee for Mo Iser. It's not official. Of course, the official one is Kieran Agard from quite a while ago now. But yeah, I think Mo Iser headlines, really, really good transfer window for the Dons. Potentially the best ever, in my opinion, in terms of the quality brought in. You know, Mo Iser, as you saw at the weekend, scores goals. That's what you need in this level. Maybe not. You don't need, you know, 20-plus goals for a record that many people seem to think you do, especially in our system where we create so many chances for our strikers and we've got such quality up there now. You know, even if he scores 15, he's probably going to have a good season. So him getting off the mark straight away is really good.
Yeah.
Troy Parrott coming in from Spurs. You know, his quality's there. He should have scored the weekend as well if it wasn't for a clearance off the line. Had a tough time at Ipswich, being played out of position and injuries. So he's promising. Outside of that, Ethan Robson's an interesting one, coming in from Blackpool, of course, was a part of that promotion-winning campaign last season and started for the pivot ahead of David Kasumi, who's unfortunately injured, which is lucky for you, because he was excellent. But Ethan did really well on Saturday and seemed to slot in and got some nice rave reviews from Don's fans. But yeah, that only sort of is a portion of the business that's been done. But I think those three in particular have been excellent pieces of the business from Russell Martin, who the next manager can utilise and hopefully achieves its full potential.
I'm glad you mentioned Ethan Robson, because I think a few Sunderland fans will be watching him this year, because he left us to go to Blackpool last season. And he was always one who looked like he was going to make it, but for one reason or another, I mean, going back to kind of Chris Coleman, never seemed to get his chance, but whenever he did, he always seemed tidy on the ball, didn't kind of, nothing spectacular, but kind of was one of those midfield players who just kept things ticking over. But I mean, like you said, he started the first game, and is that kind of the role he's playing for yourself, for MK Don?
At the moment, yeah. I mean, the funny thing is a lot of our midfielders, like Kasumi, like Robson, like Josh McEachran again, who they're quite tidy players, don't do too much, but they do their job well. And I think in that pivot role that we have within the three midfielders, that role is basically what we need for our midfielder right there. Because we have two more advanced players in Twine and O'Reilly who, you know, are going to need that creative freedom going forward to, you know, create chances. And we saw with Twine on Saturday all about that. So, yeah, I think he fits the system perfectly. And, I think he's been an excellent signing so far. And I'm assuming he'll start on Saturday. So it'd be interesting to see how he gets on against his former employers.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to come up against him again. And Josh Martin as well was another one I was going to mention. He seems like a decent left winger from Norwich on loan as well.
Yeah, it's very interesting to see where Josh Martin's going to play now, because he was brought in for us from Russell Martin anyway to play as a wing back, and a lot of fans, including Gabe Sutton, mentioned to us that he doesn't think he's going to be wing back, but we know Russell Martin the back of our hand, and we knew he was going to play there, because if he's looked at the squad, Josh Martin fitted there perfectly. He's quite an explosive player, quite a technical player who can also get past a man. And we had Dan Ethan there last season, who of course has gone back to Russell Martin and Swansea now, or it's about to anyway, if it's not official yet. But he emulates kind of what we need at wing-back position. And admittedly, Tanai Watson is currently starting there for us, and I think Tanai Watson brings a bit more solidarity in that back line. He's a bit more stable, and I think Lewington, who's the current interim manager at the moment, appreciates that from our wing-backs at least. So I think Josh Martin's an excellent option off the bench right now. If the new gaffer could find a position that he suits well, I think he'll come into that starting 11 and excel, quite frankly.
Yeah, he looks like a player him. But so now, I mean, we finally come on to the Russell Martin saga. And when I was reading about it, I can remember, because obviously at the time I was kind of looking in and, you know, just, you know, but I wasn't kind of seeing all the details. And when you kind of read up on it, you know, he was in charge for the final friendly against Tottenham on the 28th. Then 3 days later, the club released a statement confirming that Swansea had made an official approach as their man to replace Steve Cooper, which was the same day as your first game in the Carabao Cup against Bournemouth. But then I read he turned them down twice before that. So, I mean, before that official club statement came out, were you confident that he was going to stay?
Yeah, I think, well, all three of us on the podcast and a few people we spoke to closely, we're all pretty confident. On Wednesday night, we kind of brushed off the rumours. We watched the team play against Spurs, as you mentioned, and play quite well, to be fair. I think at the time, you know, the players were pretty confident he'd stay, and they hadn't really heard too much about it. But as the days went on from that game, it got worse and worse. And I think Adi Lewington came out and said after the Bournemouth match how, you know, they were finding out through social media, and they were seeing like the Sky Bet odds going down and down and down. And then finally, on the Saturday morning before the game, Russell Martin speaks to the players, said, "Oh, I might be off." And it's like, and we were on the train down to Bournemouth, bearing in mind when this statement was released. So we had a little, we kind of knew he was being approached by Swansea, but that statement kind of just confirmed it all. And I think that's why it got so toxic in the Bournemouth game. There was like, you know, fans shouting stuff about Russell Martin's family, which isn't condoned at all. Yeah. But at the same time, you've got to appreciate the situation, how the man said on Friday morning he was going to stay at the club for the long term, and literally, what, like six hours later, goes, this is arranging to go to Swansea and take his whole coach stuff with him. So it's really hard to say, have good words for him when he's just come across as a bit of a hypocrite, to be honest, and a liar. And we said the same on our own podcast, that it's just a real shame because this team has so much potential, and it still does, to be honest. And I think the performance against Bolton on Saturday really justified that. You know, this team is going to fight for, you know, what essentially are brought here for. Russell Martin recruited these players, and the new gaffer coming in is going to have a really good team on his hands if we're going to fight at the top of the table and hopefully be alongside the likes of, you know, Ipswich, yourselves, and many other teams.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I couldn't understand, because I read that statement on the club website and it was obvious the club weren't happy at all with what was going on. They weren't happy with Swansea. I assume behind the scenes they weren't happy with Russell Martin either. And I listened to your podcast, you guys talking about it. And I mean, I heard you discussing whether Russell Martin should have been on the bench for that game. And I kind of found myself agreeing with you that the club should have just went, right, you pulled and Dean Lewington's taken over.
Yeah, I mean, our sporting director, Liam Sweeting, came out and said that, you know, he's spoken to Russ, and Russ pretty much, I'm assuming, said what he said to the reporter that you heard regarding the approaches in the fact that, you know, he turned them down. Where, for what we said in the podcast, though, that was a lie. Like, he just lied to him face to face, from my opinion, because there's no way that you're switching that quickly from wanting to take Lewington on for the long term and then packing up to Swansea and taking all your coach stuff with you. It's a very sour situation. I'm sure if you go on to Lewington's Twitter, it's still very sour to this day. And Swansea fans seem to think it's a gender against him. It's not. It's just Russell Martin, quite frankly. I think until the new gaffer comes in, it's going to be quite a lot like that right now in terms of the bitterness and quite frankly, just the annoyance and anger of many people, and including ourselves.
Yeah, I'm not surprised reading it. I mean, and obviously that game, it ended up 5-0 to Bournemouth. I mean, Bournemouth are, you know, looking to be top end of the Championship, obviously, but was a lot of that scoreline down to all the events that was kind of surrounding the game?
Yeah, it was weird because the first half, they came out and actually played all right. You know, we went 1-0 down. David Brooks scored a really good goal on the half volley, but they played okay. They didn't play like the manager was saying, I'm off, basically, but they came out of the second half and it was like the gaffer basically packed his bags in front of them and said, we're off after full time. And the players came out dejected and they just looked completely lost. And I think everyone in the stands could see that travelled down to Bournemouth, and that's what made the situation even worse, because the focus taken off the game and it was towards the bench and, you know, the Bournemouth fans that, of course, were going to wind up the Dons fans because the stadium's so close and that's things just sort of happen really in away days. But, and then things happened after full time where, you know, there was going on to the coaches and things like that. But yeah, it was a good day out, but at the same time, it just turned really toxic, and it's just a difficult situation to be in.
Yeah, it happens quite easily. But I mean, I remember at the time thinking something like this, I'm about to say, and even reading back, you know, what is it, nearly a fortnight later or whatever it is. I mean, on the move to Swansea, he's only had a season and a half as a manager. And, you know, from my point of view, I just think it's one of these managers, you know, that where you see have a kind of this fantastic season and his stock just goes through the roof and then suddenly he gets this fantastic job. I mean, is there more to it than that with Russell Martin? Because I'm kind of sitting here thinking, I'm not quite sure how he was such a, you know, why Swansea were desperate to get him. But obviously, you know him better than I do.
Where they paid, I think it was £400,000 compensation, something like that, for him. So they clearly wanted him. I think during international breaks, when we played yourselves, for example, where we won at the stadium a lot, that was a key weekend for it all, because all the focus is on, you know, League One, because the internationals weren't on. Also, they were on, but they weren't playing. So we were on, like, you know, international TV, and, you know, it was quite easy to see the influence that Russell Martin was having on this. So, you know, our goalkeeper Andrew Fisher was basically playing right back for half the game, and, you know, we played really well, and we got a win against a team who we weren't expected to beat, and I think that kind of projected it all. And obviously, more eyes were on the team as the season went on, and, you know, it came down to the point where, you know, Steve Cooper left, as you said, left unexpectedly, I suppose. But he was saw something he didn't like at Swansea, that he packed his bags, and I'd say that there was a lot of buzz regarding Russell Martin but a previous job. I think it's Bristol City, if I'm correct. And, you know, he turned them down straight away. He didn't see it. But I think I've got the appeal of Swansea over time. I mentioned this when you spoke about it on our podcast, the fact that, you know, you look at the Brendan Rodgerses, the Roberto Martinez, the Graham Potter most recently. There's a clear progression there from, you know, being a manager of the Championship who, you know, wasn't, you know, he was doing okay, but then managing the national team of Belgium or going to Brighton or going to Leicester and doing so well. So I get it into the fact that there's a path to which he could get to the top of the game, which he wants to be. But I do have a feeling if Norwich come calling, he's gone. So I warn Swansea fans now, if Norwich City are going to come calling for him, he is gone in a heartbeat, and he's taking his coach up with him like he did to us.
Yeah. Well, I mean, going on to probably the complete opposite end of the spectrum, Dean Lewington stepped in to become caretaker manager, and it's a good chance to speak about Dean Lewington. He's a youth player at Wimbledon, made his debut a couple of years before it became MK Dons, and he's been at the club 17 years, played over 800 games for the club, which in the modern game is pretty ridiculous. Something, actually, I'd be surprised if we saw again. So, I mean, as club legends go, he must be at the very top for MK Dons.
Yeah, he is the one club man, I think. Absolute legend. I don't have too much words. I don't think words justify how much he means to this club and a lot of people who had done a similar move to him in terms of going from Wimbledon FC to MK Dons at that time, where, you know, it was quite a niche thing to do. And there's still people at the club to this day that have done that move, and fans that support the club that have done that same move, but they're not quite as public as Dean Lewington, because they're afraid of, you know, getting abused, things like that. And yeah, he's an absolute legend. And I found the pictures of him in the tracksuit on Saturday and the coat a bit weird. I'm used to seeing him in the MK Dons kit and he's in the tracksuit on the sidelines. This looks photoshopped to me. But no, it was brilliant. And I think the team really fought for him on Saturday, which is a really nice thing to see. I think they all like see him as a real leader and aspire to be like him towards the end of their careers. So yeah, I think hopefully they can carry that spirit onto Saturday against Sunderland in the season opener at home.
Yeah, so I mean, just taking all of that into account that you've just said, club hero, club legend, all of that sort of stuff, loved at the club, can't see anything, you know, bad about him. Is the part of you that's slightly worried if he takes the job permanently that it could end sour?
I mean, to the fact he's already said he isn't going to do that kind of writes it off for me. Mm. And this isn't just a one-time thing. He said this on many occasions and he's reiterated that to the sporting director who's leading the charge to get the new manager. I think secretly Liam Sweeting would maybe want him to take it. I think it saves him a lot of time for sure and maybe a lot of money in terms of compensation, getting the new gaffer in if he can't get one from who's a free agent essentially. But no, listen, I don't think Dino wants to be a manager. To be fair, he's still a really good player, even at his age, and it was the 18th season now, so it's stupid. So yeah, he's got a few more years in him, definitely.
Yeah. I mean, just talking about who's going to get the job, I was looking and Jody Morris is the current favourite. He's been out of work since Frank Lampard got the sack at Chelsea. I saw John Terry in the betting. James McPake was an odd one that I had to look up, and he's at Dundee. He was in the Stephen Bradley from Shamrock Rovers was in the betting. So, I mean, have you got a preference? And I mean, is your preference going to be the same as what the club might come out with?
Well, I mean, if you believe the papers, McPake, and Bradley are on the shortlist, and Jody Morris has already been contacted. I think my number one would be Jody Morris. I think he is what we need right now. I think he's got a proven track record of, you know, doing well with youth teams at the Chelsea 23s. He's got a relationship with Charlie Brown, who's one of our, you know, young prospects at the club, and I think he's going to do really well. And he's got EFL experience working under Frank Lampard with Derby and, of course, Chelsea in the Premier League. To somewhat success. You know, he did well when, unfortunately, for the last hurdle against Villa. But I think he's what we need right now. I think Stephen Bradley makes a lot of sense in Shamrock from Shamrock Rovers, as you mentioned. Very possession-based. He had a really good past couple of seasons for Shamrock Rovers. So, yeah, I like him. James McPake's an interesting one. Obviously, he just lost 6-0 to Celtic at the weekend. not sure if that's impacted Liam Sweeting's thoughts on it all. But I think the one clear thing that's been coming from the club is that they're going to take their time on it all, which is not really what you want to hear, really, when you're starting a season. You've got such a tough start. But I get the thought process. Hopefully, we'll get an update at some point this week before the game on Saturday. But yeah, I think if I had to pick one, probably Jody Morris.
Okay. Well, I mean, just in terms of you taking your time, though, because obviously there's 3 weeks left of the transfer window. And if you're maybe going to do a bit more business, does the decision around the manager kind of, you know, affect any potential deals that you've got, you know, until they get someone in charge?
I mean, we've brought in so many players already. I think if Russell Martin was still here, he maybe want to bring in one or two more. Mm. But at the end of the day, this squad is, in my opinion, a win-now squad. I think it's ready to get that far in the league. So I think a manager coming in will probably have to have the attitude of that this is your squad till January, and then we'll see where you are from there. They've spent so much money on it, I think. As mentioned, you know, club record fee on Mo Isa and all the other trimmings as well. So, yeah, I think signing players isn't going to be a priority. There's been plenty of additions and the squad's good enough right now.
In terms of the expectation for this season, you know, where is that now? Because obviously, did you have a different expectation before Russell Martin, when, you know, everything was rosy, you were signing Mo Isa, pre-season was going well, suddenly Russell Martin leaves, everything's up in the air, you know, so where's your expectation for the season now?
Yeah, I think pre Russell Martin leaving, it was to finish in the top six. I think, well, as I said, I think the squad's win now. I think it's ready to do that. I don't think Russell Martin leaving changes that too much. The big decider of who comes in, basically, I think that's the big one. If it's Stephen Bradley, if it's Jody Morris, then Well, more Bradley. If Bradley comes in, I think the situation doesn't really change too much. You know, he's a proven winner, whether that be in Ireland or not. And his style of football is what the club's been trading on the past 18 months. So it's not too much of a change. I think that's why he's a favourite in the market, and it makes sense. Jody Morris is a bit of a different story. Of course, first managerial role, really. That's not assistant manager. I think it's harsh to expect him to finish top six straight away. But at the same time, the squad's good enough to do well. I think he's a young squad. He's been managing young players his whole career, pretty much, and excelled with them at the same time. I think anything less than the 30th finish from last season would be a disappointment, quite frankly.
Mm. Yeah, but I mean, it's still a gap that you've got to bridge, you know, from mid-table. And as he said, the gap wasn't, it's not too much maybe in points at last season, but having that consistency to stay in the playoffs, it would have still been a big gap to bridge, whoever it's going to be.
I think for me personally, I think a lot of teams think their squads are good, but they're actually not. we've got a few teams. Wigan, for example, they're not a good team. I don't care if they sign Humphreys and White. They're just not going to blend together, in my opinion. Shrewsbury, another example, they're not going to do well this year. I think teams like Burton will take a step up, but taking them to the top six is interesting. And then you're looking at the same. I think Wigan will do real this year. I think Sunderland have actually got rid of Deadwood, quite frankly, in terms of the players they've got rid of. And I think they'll do well this year. Ipswich, of course, will do well because they spent shitloads of money. Apologies for wearing.
I've heard worse on our podcast, that's for sure.
Yeah. And I think Charlton will do well. I think Charlton have got a good squad. And I trust their recruitment team and I trust the manager to do well. So outside of that, I don't see many better squads than ours. I'll be honest. I don't think I'm being biased there. I think our squad's good enough to compete in the top six, and it just needs the right gaffer.
Before we finish, I'm going to hold you for a League One prediction this year, so I'll give you a couple of minutes to mull that over. But I mean, the opening day finally arrived. We talked about us against Wigan, and you had Bolton Wanderers away from home, ended up in a 3-3 draw, and ended up game of the day on Quest, which of course is the most important thing of all, as Sunderland fans have learned. Yeah. bit of an epic. You took the lead twice and you came from behind in the game as well. And Bolton scored in the 95th minute. I assume you're looking at it as 2 points dropped.
Yeah, but I think at the same time, if you ask any Dons fan, you know, you're travelling up to Bolton, you either see six goals and takes them from the game, I think you'd be over the moon, to be honest. It's such a difficult week for everyone involved that I feel, you know, we got a point off just pure spirit and pure determination. Bolton are not no mugs this season. I think they'll be top half, definitely. And I thought that before the game on Saturday. They got a really good squad there. They kept it together pretty much. Signed some players who League One experience in Bakayoko, for example. I think they'll give everyone a tough game this year. It was quite funny, you know, because the guy who scored the third goal, Hiram Boateng, he'd been frozen out essentially by Russell Martin. Didn't get a squad number this season. And then Dean Linton brought him back in. And funny enough, Dean Linton also got frozen out by a previous manager in Robbie Nielsen. So he sort of shared that experience with him. So I had a little chat with him, said, "Do you come back into the squad?" Gave him the very team shirt, and he gets the third goal in the 86th minute to, you know, at the time, win us the game. But of course, you know, Baptiste got the weirdest equalising goal I've ever seen. It's a really good performance. I think defensively, it wasn't great, but we have got off, I think it was a second choice goalkeeper in goal because Fisher's still training and not exactly match fit just yet. We're hoping he's back Saturday. I think I'm expecting to be back Saturday. Overall, pretty happy with that. Some cracking goals in there, I'm sure you've seen, if you've seen the highlights. I'm looking forward to seeing the boys on Saturday for sure.
Yeah, I'm not sure my heart could put up with a game like that this weekend. I was looking at last season's games. You took 4 points off us last season, and your win at the Stadium of Light was actually Phil Parkinson's last as manager. So we've got a lot to be grateful for MK Dons in that respect.
Yeah, no worries.
Drew twos each at Stadium NK, which was a good game. But this weekend, I was looking, the bookies have got us favourites 11 to 10, take all 3 points. MK Dons are 12 to 5 to win at home, same as the draw. But I mean, from an MK Dons point of view, is it just a case of it's a home game, so any home game you just expect, or, you know, you think you should be winning that?
Yeah, I don't win. I think, unlike previous seasons, I'm quite high on Sunderland this year in terms of where they'll finish. As I mentioned already, I think they've got quite a lot of dead wood in terms of the squad, and I think the squad they've got now is probably the best they've had since they got back into League One. Yeah, I mean, it's not really surprising it's another favourites, because we've got a bloody manager. We've got a coaching football staff either. We'll have to draft him Ray Livington, for example, to help Dean coach the players. He's meant to be retiring. Yeah, I honestly, if you give me a point now, I take it. But listen, I think the Dons fans are going to get behind the team 100%. And of course, with the Sunderland fans there, it's going to be quite a good crowd on Saturday. So I think it'll be a good game. I think prediction-wise, I'll go 2-2. So yeah, quite a nice game. I think our strikers will get a bag for the goals, and yeah, be entertaining watch.
Plenty of goals, good stuff. But I mean, in terms of Dean Lewington, how he's going to set up, has he carried everything across? I mean, you mentioned players there, one of the players he's brought back in, but I mean, in terms of how he's setting up, is he doing anything different? Has he brought his own ideas in?
Well, I think the main thing has been that he's mostly the same, apart from he's taking less risks with the goalkeeper. And that may be because it's the second choice goalkeeper and not Andrew Fisher, who's first choice. Maybe that's a thing we'll see on Saturday. Who knows? But I think Dean Lewington, you know, end of the day, his team right now, and he's to do what he wants. And I think he's never really been a big fan of, you know, playing little ticky tacker passes around the back. He'd rather just lump it upfield and let the attacking players do the talking. Mm. And to be fair, to most football fans, that's how it should be. But that's the main thing. It's a 3-4-1-2. So it's two strikers up front, probably going to be Mo Iser and, if fit, Max Waters, but if not, Troy Parrott. And then Scott Twine will be in behind them, and then you have players like Ethan Robson and Matt O'Reilly operating behind Twine, being sort of free roaming. Yeah, but it's still heavily possession based. It's still keeping it on the ground, playing attractive football. The MK way, as some people call it. But hey, it's going to be entertaining. I think as much as we have chances going forward, we're going to give them going back. So yeah, I think it'll be up to which strike force can be more clinical on the day.
Mm. So since you watch them, or you've watched them, you know, against Bournemouth and you watch them against Bolton, if we put you in Lee Johnson's shoes, I mean, what would your game plan be? Would you push right onto you when you're in possession, or would it be kind of the standoff? What would your game plan be?
Ooh, because a lot of teams actually did high press on us, and I think it worked because we were doing this, you know, ticky tack around the back, and our players were still getting used to it and things like that. And I think Sunderland away was the first time we really saw it in full effect. I think for me, I'd probably just utilize Aidan McGee as much as possible. That's on the counter attacks, in creative spaces, in the pocket, wherever. Just make the game for Aidan McGee. I think he's the guy that's going to change the game for you. And, you know, I think all you got to do is feed Ross Stewart. I think because I think our defence has typically struggled against your big body centre forwards who, you know where the goal is. And I think Ross Stewart, I'm not really classing his first 6 months of Sunderland as like his start. I'm classing it as now. I sort of see him as a summer signing because, you know, what happened before and the toxicity around it was, I don't really class it as that. And obviously he started off well against that goal against Wigan. So yeah, I think if he can get a hold of probably Warren O'Hara in the centre of defence, yeah, it could be a difficult day for Sunderland. But yeah, I'd focus my plan on Aidan McGeady for sure if I was Lee Johnson.
Yeah, well, Ross Stewart came in with a hamstring injury as well. So he's
oh, wow.
It's about the first time we've seen him, I think, fully fit as it stands. But I think it might surprise you, actually, because against Wigan, I think we played as much into his feet as we did in the air. He's pretty good with his feet. He's quite positive. So, okay. So he could surprise a few defenders who are maybe expecting some kind of launch diagonals into him, and it doesn't.
I'll have to send a message to Dean and Ray, let him know.
But yeah, I mean, coming back, I mentioned earlier on, let's have a look in the League One kind of crystal ball. You know, Sunderland outright favourite 7-4. You've got Ipswich just behind 9-4. Then you've got a bunch of teams: Sheffield Wednesday, Portsmouth, Rotherham. Probably just the kind of big clubs. At the minute, you're 10th in the betting for promotion at 11-2. Would you say that's about right?
Yeah, right now. I think that could change, obviously, depending on who's appointed manager. I think if it's a certain if it's a Morris or a Bradley, it goes up. If it's a McPake, which quite frankly many Dons fans want, it probably stays about the same or even goes down. Mm. It's hard to say right now. In terms of, I think temp's about right. I think we've gone up a few places since I last checked. They probably could be signed, you know, Isaac, Parrott, things like that. You know, they're quite key signings for a club that needed that strikers up front, quite frankly, in terms of where we were looking at previously. But yeah, it seems about right. And the bookies are really wrong, aren't they? Let's face it.
Well, at this point, it's worth bringing up that ahead of the season starting, we did our League One predictions on the site. And we did, seven of us who did, a full League One table. And the average position across the seventh of us for MK Dons was ninth.
Okay.
But I will say that the range between the seven of us went from fourth to 14th, which suggests we haven't really got a clue, to be fair. So who knows? anything from within fourth to 14th. But yeah, I mean, who do you fancy to take the two automatic spots then? And maybe who do you fancy to sneak it through the playoffs this season?
Yeah, I'm going to be boring and say Wickham and Ipswich as the two automatics. Mm. You know, Wickham, got new owners. Ainsworth's probably the best manager in the league. And they've got some really good players. And I think that on Saturday they showed that in a pretty tough game, to be fair. So, yeah, I think Wickham will do well this year. We've been a fellow Buckinghamshire team, it hurts to say. But, you know, it's hard to underestimate their quality. Instead of Ipswich, it's kind of like an all-star team at the moment, isn't it? They've got Joe Pickett up front now, who knows the division on the back of his hand. Mm. Scott Fraser was one of the best midfielders in the league last year. He's already got off the mark for them. And that's only the start of it in terms of the players they've got. In terms of playoffs, that's tough right now because there's a lot of teams, yeah, I think, could get in there.
That's right.
I do quite like Charlton. I think Charlton are a solid team, and I think it's about time they went up. I think Stockley's got a good season in him. I would expect Dons to be in and around the playoffs, to be honest. So, but I don't trust them in the playoffs. they never do well in the playoffs. So I can't see it being this year now, of course, with what's happened. But no, I'd say Wickham and Ipswich for the automatics, and then probably, if I'd say now, probably Charlton for the playoffs.
Mm. Yeah, you're speaking to a Sunderland fan about not liking playoffs, so I think we'll leave the playoffs behind. On Saturday, back at Stadium MK, I imagine, is there a bit of a buzz around the place? Everyone getting back?
Yeah, I mean, obviously we were back against Spurs, but it was a pre-season game. It doesn't really count.
There's a difference. So,
yeah, exactly. There definitely is a difference. So it'd be nice to get back to see everyone again. People that I missed, obviously, against Bournemouth and Bolton, which I couldn't unfortunately go to. It's going to be a really good time, and hopefully we get the result to match that. And if not, decent atmosphere.
A third you mentioned there, but you've got a ticket, yeah, for the game.
Oh, Saturday. Yeah. Season ticket's meant to be coming on Wednesday, so we'll see about that. But yeah, should be okay.
Well, I hope Saturday's game is a good one. We've had some good ones in recent years, like I said. I remember a little bit of a pitch invasion from the Sunderland fans when Lyndon Coote scored a couple of years ago, which was
good goal, to be fair. Yeah.
but on that note, I just want to say thank you very much, Liam. Really enjoyed the chance to catch up, and obviously, except against us, all the best for the season ahead, mate.
Yeah, same to you. Thank you very much.
Cheers, Liam. Thanks again for listening, everyone. Keep a look out at Rocker Report for all the build-up ahead of the game at MK Dons on Saturday. And keep an eye out in all the usual places for the next pod. But from us, it's bye for now.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.